Today's concurrent session is about the mortality of the public sector scheme pensioners for 2009 to 2012. I'm Richard Land, and our presenters today are Richard Boyfield and Anne Wilson. Mercer started analysing the pensioner database about 10 years ago, with an initial study covering public sector pensioner mortality from 2002 to 2005. Data has been collected annually since then, and now covers all major Australian public sector pensioners, except the military. Reports have been produced for the various financial services forums during that period. The results of the study are used to derive mortality table for valuation of pension liabilities, annuity pricing, and retirement planning. Our presenters today are Richard Boyfield, who's a partner with Mercer Australia, where he leads the retirement public sector team and is actuary to several public sector schemes. Richard is heavily involved in post-retirement solutions and pension risk in defined benefit funds. Prior to Mercer Australia, Richard worked with both Mercer and Towers Watson in the UK, specialising in pension risk strategy. Anne Wilson is a Mercer consultant, having joined a Mercer predecessor company after graduating from Macquarie University in 1973 and qualifying in 1976. She specialises in the New South Wales public sector. She's authored several papers for the Actuaries Institute, including the A.M. Parker Prize-winning paper on projection mathematics. She manages the Mercer Pensioner database.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. And I shall carry this around just in case I start wandering off, and because apparently it's been recorded. So we're going to cover the results of the latest pensioner study into the public sector schemes. As Richard says, this has been going for since about 2006. What we're going to actually take a look at is some of the trends that are coming out of the study, some of the quirks, because there's a few things which are happening which maybe you wouldn't naturally expect, and overall just see what kind of information that might provide that we might want to use in other areas as well. I'll also touch on, just to try and put a dollar amount on things, to try and give you a bit of a perspective of how significant the overall mortality is and the difference in trends and the actual level of improvements that we predict for the future. Now, the organisers have done their job, and they've managed to put the two mortality sessions one after the other. We will sort of finish off by talking about some of the projection methodologies, and then the next session, so you're all going to be sort of stuck in this room, I'm sure, for the next session as well, we'll actually talk a little bit more about different ways in terms of projecting the mortality into the future. Okay, so before I actually get started, I'll just a big thank you to Anne, who has been involved in these mortality studies from the very start. If it wasn't for Anne and the team working with her, these mortality studies wouldn't get done. I think they, hopefully by the time we get to the end, you'll see that there's some pretty useful information in here, pretty helpful both for public sector DB scheme liabilities, but also to apply in terms of defined contribution schemes as well, should I say. That is also my way, by the way, of making sure that any difficult technical questions get directed towards Anne. So. Okay, so to start off with, just a sort of scene setter, if you like. On the screen here, you'll see that there's quite a sizeable public sector liability. For those of you who probably can't see down to the bottom, the headline number here at the bottom is that there's an unfunded liability of around $230 billion. So that's quite a sizeable figure. We've actually netted off the future fund here. Future fund's probably around somewhere around $100 billion. So if we were actually to start looking at this, that would be maybe $330 billion of unfunded liabilities, depending on your view on what the future fund will be used for. And then some of the schemes are actually at least partially funded, and therefore the total liabilities for public sector, I don't know, let's use a round number, let's call it $500 billion in total. So you can see that we're talking about some pretty large numbers here and a lot of people involved. The overall superannuation, sort of around 1.7 trillion or so. Well, if there's 500 billion within the public sector, that's a pretty sizable proportion of this industry. Okay. Mortality, we know, impacts the overall liability. What projections, what assumptions we make, we'll try and show you a few of those impacts as we go through later on. But just bear in mind, if that's 500 billion worth of liability, even if the mortality just changes the liability by 1%, yeah, that's 5 billion. These are pretty big numbers. And so the importance of actually getting the mortality expectations right makes some fairly big financial impacts. Okay, just to give a brief illustration of that, within the data, there's 8.5 billion of pensions in payment. Okay, this is giving a liability of around 150 billion. Okay, that excludes the military. If you add the military in, we think that probably adds an extra 30 billion in terms of liability in there. So again, pretty large numbers. Pension is probably around about a third or more of the overall liability. So it's quite a sizable population. In terms of, therefore, its use and its reliability, there is a substantial amount of data there which we can use to try and draw some inferences from. Talking of drawing some inferences, I know there's at least a couple of people here, I think, from the public sector. Some of the trends that we get coming out of here, some of the quirks, if you like, and the explanations of why they are, there may be some stereotypes that could be thrown at it in terms of, well, why are they coming through? I, working closely with the public sector, I shall defend all those public servants here. You know, we like to think we partner closely with the public servants, so, you know, that's pretty much have the same impact. So any suggestions that the results out of here suggest that you've got a well-paid, low-stress job, I shall defend for you, you know, because I know working with you that I'm certainly, John, you know, highly stressed, and, you know, our fees are extremely good value, so I shall leap to your defence. Please feel free to make your own observations in terms of the data as we go through. Ask any questions as well. Some of the quirks, there's no obvious answer. There's no reason why that trend is there. We will, you know, Anne in particular, I think, will provide you with a few of our suggestions, but we'd be open to hear what you guys think as well. Okay? So I shall hand over to Anne to actually run through the detailed findings that we've got, and I'll come back and show you some dollar amounts as well later. So.
I'm not actually going to ramble around. So, firstly, the Australian Public Sector Pension Database, or the Mercer Pension Database, a little bit of background was given by Richard earlier. To give you some further detail, the way it's run, it's actually a collection of all the pensioner data, annually updated, and allowing for corrections of errors and omissions. And each time we collect it, we correct previous years in the interest of getting it, well, righter than it was before. Pensioner data in from the people who actually pay the pensions is in effect inherently reliable, because after all, the pensioner, it's in their interest to make sure the pension is actually there when they're paying the pension. So we've got an exposed to risk and a number of actual deaths that are linked together, which is not the case in the construction of population mortality tables, because they use projections of population mortality and registry of births, deaths and marriages, deaths. And that causes distortions, particularly at older ages, which I'll get onto later. And in effect, the analysis itself is a check on the data, because we need to explain why something looks funny. So we go back, if something turns up that doesn't look as though it should be there, we go back and check further data. And the data comes from various public sector funds. We can go back and ask them what happened here that caused this quirk. And we do. The database itself contains about 4.5 million years of experience, and the public sector subset that we're looking at the moment, 2009 to 2012, has 800,000 years of exposure. And that represents $24 billion of annual pension payments. The current, well, the 11-12 pension payroll was about $8.5 billion. I could also mention here at this stage that the pensioner database itself has been made available to university research groups to for their own research projects, and two universities have taken up that offer at this stage. And that's part of the agreement with the public sector schemes that provide the data, that it is made available for research. And it's in their interest, effectively, to make it available for research, because the more we know about it, the more we know how much we've got to pay. However, there are still some subgroups within the data that we can't make statistically valid get statistically valid results because they're fairly small. And in particular, that's male spouses and very advanced age pensioners. Now, to the actual results. Retiree pensioners are the ones we're looking at. This first graph compares Australian population mortality with the actual experience of the 2009-12 retiree public sector pensioners. The Australian population mortality we use is ABS 2009-11. The reason we use that instead of Australian life tables is because they haven't put out the latest Australian life tables yet, and so we'd have to be looking at 2005-07. So we picked the ABS table that covers the same period, more or less. And having said that, we also adjust it for the most recent 25-year average improvement rates that we've got available, which are the ALT 2005-07. This is the main result. This is the male retirees as a percentage of population in quinquennial subgroups, so to reduce the scatter effect of individual ages. This shows that you've got initial selection when they retire. Public sector pensioners are in reasonably good health compared to the rest of the population, we assume. This is age retirement, so that they're retiring from the workforce. And there's also probably a slight effect of people being able to commute part or all their pension if they're in, say, they don't expect to get the full benefit of a pension because they expect to die reasonably soon. So, and then this selection appears to wear off over the period since following retirement, blending with the rest of the population. I'll get to the anomalies later. Females, much the same. So it's the same shape. Slightly less smooth because there are only about half the number of female retirees in the public sector as there are males. Dotted line is a 2005-09 result. So the experience that we have been following for the past 10 years looks as though it's got the same characteristics. That's the female line. However, the over 90 group looks odd because public sector pensioners actually die off faster than the general population after they get to age 90. This has been happening since 2002-05, and I'm convinced it's real. So either public sector pensioners do die off faster than the general population, or perhaps the general population ALT, ABS rates are wrong. And that's not necessarily an outrageous statement, because at those advanced ages, the experience is very small, and the methods of extrapolating the rates, if you like, extrapolating the projected population, can have a significant effect on the actual rates that you end up producing. I think ours are right, because ours are the same population. The deaths we've got have actually arisen from the population we've got. So the public sector rates are right. Doesn't necessarily mean the the population rates, the rates are wrong. But they may be wronger than ours. And the data is small for us as well, so that you could expect some swings. The other area, under 61, is a new anomaly, if you like. The if you like, early retirement period under 61 seems to be less healthy. These are retirees, not disabled lives. The less healthy people are choosing to retire earlier, perhaps, or perhaps they're being retired earlier, retrenched or whatever, and that affects them. They feel less healthy because they haven't got a job anymore. Or there could be a cohort effect. They're a new set of people. They weren't in the last investigation because they hadn't retired then. But still note, the mortality rates are lower than the general population. The next is a comparison of the individual contributing states to the result. This is the blue line from the previous graph. And the idea is to see whether the blue line is actually an average of a wide range of experience or not. State A looks like it's fairly similar. State B, or state group B, state C, fairly similar. But this gives us confidence, if you like, in the trends that are being brought out by the overall experience. State D, E, F, slightly more variation. And that slightly more variation is directly linked to the size of the data in those states. Though there could possibly be some sort of effect because different states have different combination rights, different mixes of people in the public sector, pensioner groups. So this reassuring spread. The female spread, which I'm not going to show you, it's in the paper itself, is wider, mainly because there are smaller numbers in each group. It also gives support, if you like, to extrapolation or usage of this experience to the general retiree population. Next result, spouse pensioners. Again, compared to ABS 0911, with adjustments for improvements. See that we have, in fact, higher mortality for spouses than we have for retirees. It's less smooth because the data is smaller. And, of course, the male spouse rates are even less smooth because there's fairly just about none of them, and even less than just about none in the plus 90. It's generally about population level experience, perhaps slightly lower, perhaps slightly reflecting that they were married to a public sector, a public servant. Perhaps they may well have been slightly higher socioeconomic scale. At the younger age, it does kick up a bit. Is there perhaps a selection effect, a reverse selection effect, if you like, meaning higher mortality depending on duration of taking up a reversion or spouse death? So I looked at that. This is a female spouse experience, plus 3 and under 3 years duration since commencement of pension, in other words, the widowhood. And it looks like there is a reverse selection effect at least under 75. The interesting thing is, over 75, it's healthier if you knock off your husband. So. Next, invalidity pensioners. Since we've got invalidity pensioners, we might as well have a look at those as well. And the experience is what you'd generally expect. Higher mortality rates than the general population and sort of trending down, a selection effect, again, reverse selection effect, immediately after disability, which is after the closer you are to disability, which is the closer you are to retirement age or before that when the pension starts, the higher rate. And the effect of disability on mortality wears off as you pass, go past the initial onset of disability, you just got chronically disabled, they still are higher than the general population. The other thing that we studied is socioeconomic effect. If we weight the experience by pension amount rather than by lives, we get a sort of a proxy for a socioeconomic effect. Given we haven't got a very large range of pension amounts in the public sector, it's surprising to me that we get such a pronounced correlation, if you like. The lower proportions, the lower line, means we've got lower mortality for higher pension amount. So this is clearly the case for male retiree pensions. Female retirees, not so obvious. Well, I invite you to have a thought, think about that. Speculate. on some sort of reason. Leave that for later if you like. Then, comparing the experience with the previous experience, Mercer constructs a mortality tables for pensioners. We constructed a table we called Mercer 0509 using the previous experience, and we've compared that with the 0912 experience, adjusted for using 25-year average improvements. And that comparison tells us that we got it pretty much right. The 25-year improvements that we did actually assume seem to have fairly closely followed the experience. Again, with the exceptions at either end. Over 90, it gives you the maximum variation in the standard from the, so about 10% either way. Again, this is not a big concern because of the low numbers, and also for the purposes that we use the mortality tables, the over 90s are not a significant financial burden. Under 60, again, we've got this anomaly. And it's interesting to note that the comparable age group in the population also experienced a dip. So they didn't experience a 25-year average improvement either. So having got that comparison, we did actually derive Mercer 0912 tables, which are fairly similar to the Mercer 0509 plus 25-year average improvements, with just a slight refinement here and there. So we should get a flat line when we compare the experience with the actual rates. We did also derive amounts-based tables, which may well be more useful for people considering buying annuities or pricing annuities either for themselves or for either life officers pricing annuities or pricing a longevity product. So the main thing that comes out of that one is that the improvements rates over the 5 years, or not the 5 years, the 4 years, since the previous rates were about the 25-year. Let's have a look at what the improvement rates actually were. First of all, we look at the population mortality improvements. Since we don't have ALT rates, I've gone back to the ABS rates again. So we're looking at the improvement between ABS 2005-07 to ABS 2009-11, just in the retirement age group. And we look at the male improvement rate. So, yes, they did improve. They didn't improve as much for under age 60. That's the 25-year average. So they improve less than the 25-year average, but more than the 100-year average. Interestingly, the under 60 is less than the 100-year average. Females, a similar result. Generally less than the 25-year average and more than the 100-year. In fact, they're sort of midway. And note that the band is smaller for females than it is for males. So effectively, the males are doing a catch-up job. So the bottom line is that mortality improvement for the population is slowing down. This one here, the extra two lines that I added on the graph are the mortality improvement rates for the previous two ALT tables. So that's ALT 2000 to 2005, 2 and to 2005-7. So they were, in fact, slightly more than the 25-year average. So we expect, when the new ALT rate tables come out, that the 25-year average will have reduced. We now have a look at what our pensioners are doing. This is the improvement rate for the male retiree pensioners. Looks like it's a bit more than your general population. So it looks like average 25 years. With the largest reductions are actually in the middle age, in this one, 71 to 85. But at the lowest age, mortality actually increased for our pensioners, even though it increased to a level still less than the population. And for over ages 90, it also increased, but then again, we've got a fairly small population. Females, same story. Maybe they're slightly more than the average 25-year. But they're definitely more than the 100-year. And they also both have the same anomaly at each end. And it's worth noting that the anomaly at the low age end, well, the 60, under 60, was actually beginning to appear in the 2005-09 experience, because there was a bend up in the improvement rates in that experience. Now, having a look at what we can use these rates for, we've calculated the life expectancies. Life expectancies is a little bit of a bugbear of mine, because it's not what you can expect to live, it's how long people who've already died lived. So that, but lacking anything else, we can start with that anyway. So this is a life expectancy for a 65-year-old, or the age of the 65-year-old can expect to live to, under the current population rates and the previous population rates, and the same for the pensioner mortality rates. Both have improved by more or less the same amount. Interesting to note that world life expectancies have been increasing at around 3 months a year for the past 160 years. So the 100-year rate is fairly common worldwide. And the ALT life expectancies have also been increasing at about 3 months per year for the last 126 years, which is the period covered by the ALT. tables. Yesterday, somebody, I can't remember who it was, said that as the state pension was devised in early 1900s, it was perhaps based the retirement age was based on what life expectancy was then, which is 55 years. It was actually that the 55 years at birth, life expectancy on the 1910 ALT tables was 76. So they were planning on average paying a pension for 11 years from age 65. At the same time, the New South Wales State Super Scheme was devised. That was around the same time. And they set a retirement age of 60, and perhaps in the same context, because they were expecting to pay a pension for about 16 years. These improvement rates extrapolating, do we expect to continue with the 3 months per year based on 100 years experience, or do we extrapolate based on the 25 year average? This table is based on adding future improvements. I think it is actually prudent, if you're valuing pensions, to include some allowance for improvement. And it is a significant difference to the amount that you've got to reserve. So I've actually assumed for these comparisons that we have, in effect, a select improvement period for about 6 years at the 25-year average rates, and then going back to the 100-year rates. And that's to reflect the observed lowering of the population improvement rates. Doesn't necessarily follow that the pensioners won't continue to improve at 25 years, but then again, they might not. So including future improvements adds about 2 years to your population life expectancy and about 1.5 years to pensioners. Life expectancy isn't everything. Even if you survive to the life expectancy average, the average person survives to about the 500,000. This is a survival graph starting with a population of 100,000 at age 65 for male retirees males comparing the ABS rates with the Mercer 0912, which is the current experience. Life expectancy is at the 50,000 level. However, there's quite a lot of them go past that. So which line do you think you're going to be on? I mean, which level? And I'll turn over to Richard to discuss the financial significance of whichever.
Okay, thanks. And maybe just before I let you depart there, if anyone has any, would anyone like to ask any questions really? Because they're the main findings, if you like, from the actual study. So have we any questions?
That's the actual, the rest of it's speculation.
Yes, the rest is speculation. Sorry, could we ask you to ask the question at the
microphone? I'm Michelle from TAL. On a couple of the state graphs, the top ends duck down again and seem to mirror the population data rather than the other pensioner data. Have you got any sort of reason why that might be, or is that just again down to the number of pensioners at that age?
Basically, it's down to the number of pensioners, really. Because they all have very small numbers, and it's even smaller when you split it up into various groups, and they might only have 100, even smaller.
Did you work out which state was which? Yeah, you were probably kind of trying to work out which was the one that was sort of, you know, life expectancy was fantastic at around 70. You'll go and move and work in that state, I think, to be honest.
Well, I think that there's probably more to where you worked than where you actually live when you retire. Hmm. Where you actually live when you retire is maybe socioeconomic, because you can afford to live there. But then again, where you worked may affect your health.
I know, coming from the UK, postcode analysis is used very closely and literally down to the kind of street and local area that you live in, and the insurers use that to a great extent. I guess less able to do that here, to the extent that postcodes are much wider areas, but it may well be something that would be interesting to look into the future for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you'll probably find that Australians are more mobile.
Yes. Yes, probably.
Moving from the UK to Australia so they can get the benefit of the improved mortality rate.
That's right. We'll see that later in one of the stats, that yes, definitely much better life style over here, because the mortality rates are better here than in the UK. Any other questions at this stage? No? Okay.
Save them up, think harder.
Save them for the end. So we've got about 5 or 10, is it?
About 10 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll just try and just bring out a few things. And in terms of the costings, but also in kind of potentially some of the implications that we could have for this in terms of the superannuation industry in general. One of those is that Anne's already mentioned about this curve and sort of showing that, you know, often quoted in the press is the average, and the average is just, you know, probably there might be one person who actually lands on that average, you know, and everyone else is either side. If we actually look at these numbers, 20% here of people under the improvement going to live past 95, okay? 20% past 95, about 40% past 90, and then obviously there's a lot of people who will go before then. How many people think that when you're looking to plan, particularly people coming out of a DC scheme, they're actually thinking of those kind of numbers? They're not planning for those kind of numbers at all. You know, and one of the major things that's in the press, a lot of the things that we're doing a lot of work on at Mercer, and I know a lot of other people are, is how do we actually provide adequate retirement incomes for people all the way through. And when you start to see these kind of stats coming through compared to the just standard Australian life tables, you can see why that's not quite so easy, and it's a hard message to try to get across to people. The other point I bring out in this point is, if you look at the average, this is 85 here. If you actually include improvement, that's about an extra 4+ years. That's quite a substantial variation just within the average itself. So actually trying to plan for that is obviously going to be very difficult. If we can't even sort of say with some degree of certainty where we think the average is going to be, how can people who've got to actually plan for their individual lifespan work out what that should be? Okay. Picture for females is fairly similar, probably slightly less dispersed. Probably the other point to add into this is that those are life expectancies, say, you can see this bulge coming out there, which is about four-year difference. From an insurance annuity perspective, you've got to allow for caution. I'm sure, I think lady there from town will say, you know, in terms of capital requirements, etc., an annuity is going to look expensive when you've got to put that into play, and yet individuals are probably looking at the position with no improvement. In order to try and, you know, get the education there to the population, some of these things we need to try to bring out more and more, I think. Here's an example in terms of those potential costs. ABS stats here, so maybe easily published, easily picked up by the press. If you do the valuation on this basis compared to 25-year improvement, which is the one that Anne was talking about, and 100 years thereafter, moving further to actually having just 25 years average continuously ongoing, not a big step, but just have that included. If we then include those versions on the public sector pension and mortality, which in some ways I think is probably a little bit more realistic than the overall average population for those who have got a pension, because they're probably, if you've got a pension, a reasonable pension, you're probably in the better off category. 20% increase in value. 20% increase in value. If you turn that around when speaking to an individual and say, well, actually, you can either have this lump sum, work it through, and I'll put it this way. If you then said to the person, instead of the premium I've just quoted to you for that annuity, I'll knock 20% off, is the other way to try and frame it more in a realistic perspective, then you're well, economics says you'll definitely get more people taking up that annuity, but I suspect the uptake could be fairly substantial, okay? So a lot of the positioning in terms of things like annuities are, yes, there's capital requirements and profits, etc., to be banked in there, but there's also a framing position as well. And I think these kind of statistics show that up. A few numbers on here. Given the time frame, I'll just literally focus on one, which is the diagonal, because that's the two numbers that I showed you on the previous page. If you go from here, no improvements, to the Mercer tables with improvements, the overall increase in value is 13.2%. Now, that is on, the previous slide was on a male. This is adding in a spouse pension of two-thirds. That dampens the impact for two reasons. One is that I think the improvement in the spouses in female mortality is slightly less than the males, but also if you add an extra year onto a joint life, which is already, say, 20, 25 years, the extra 1 year makes less of a difference than if you shove it onto the end of a single life, which is only, say, 15, 16 years due to discounting, and I'm sure most of you in the room will understand that point. But it is an important factor, again, when you're talking to individuals as to what is the actual impact, because the majority of people do have a spouse or a financial dependent at the point of retirement. Okay. Take another extreme, individual, and this is probably the people who most, you know, superannuation funds are talking to day in, day out, and that is the people who are actually still working. So someone who's aged 45, so this individual, remember the increase was 20% last time, increase is now 30%. Imagine trying to talk to someone who's 45 years old about how much they need to put away for their pension and how long they may live. Oh, and by the way, that's probably 30% more than those figures that you're seeing in the paper. It's quite a big impact, and it's very hard to get that message across. But the results of studies like this, we hope, provide the information and the statistics to back things up to help us get the right messages out there into the press, into the communications with our membership. And I think more and more people are starting to pick up on these kind of statistics and the impact and the distributions around the average, as it were. Okay. Just to finish off then with another slide, and to help lead into the next session after the break as well. This wasn't planned, by the way. We start off with look at the no future improvements, the base statistics. You can see that as we've already shown, the public sector experience is better in terms of the overall cost. Sorry, I've missed a step in that we've actually provided a value based on these mortality tables of a pension roll of 2.25 billion and put it into dollar amounts. It's a little bit easier to understand the improvements. So about 30 billion under the ABS, 31.1 under the Mercer tables with no improvements. Compare that to 1988. So these are the rates we were using as actuaries, we were using as tables in 1988. So 25 years ago, only 25 billion. So there's been about a 25% increase over a 25-year period. I do that because it makes the numbers seem easy to me. So it's about 1% a year. You go back to what I said at the beginning, if the overall liability is around 500 billion, 1% a year, about 5 billion a year just being added on to the liability just because of the fact we're all living a bit longer. Okay? Fairly substantial numbers and impacts. And if you multiply that out into the population, you can see the cost impacts, and you can see in the budget why there's a lot of talk about pensions and the age at which we retire. We've added a couple of extra ones just for interest. NTC, notional tax contribution rates, not bad actually, 31.3. It surprised me at sort of how reasonable it might be, particularly when you compare that to family law, which seems remarkably lower than everything else. The lesson to learn from this is that the tax man is actually not being too bad, I suspect, and it does cost you to get divorced, okay, because the amount you're going to get in here is going to impact you. And just to finish off, we've got the UK, so CMI tables. Come to the next session if you want to know more about the CMI tables. But this is latest information on occupational pension schemes. You can see the Brits. So it's a good job I've moved to Australia. I've improved my life expectancy because it's probably most comparable to this one. And we've added some extra numbers with improvements. But there's a variation there because we put different levels of improvements in the two, so they're probably not that comparable. Overall, we think these studies make a big impact. It's useful information to see. Maybe the mortality is starting to flatten out, which makes it a bit easier for us all to start to predict and make projections, which is good news, but that might be temporary, who knows. And overall, the financial impacts of this are very significant, and it, again, it just highlights how difficult and hard it is to actually plan for retirement on an individual basis. And, you know, from our perspective, I think it shows the value of pooling of longevity risk in retirement. So with that, and I shall maybe hand back to Richard. I don't know if we've got time for one last question or so. Dealing with a burning question.
We've got, I think, 2 minutes left, so we probably do have time for one last question if anyone's got a question they'd like to ask.
That's John Bayliss from State Super. Thanks very much, guys. Very interesting. My question is that 25 years, 1% a year, how stable is it? So does it spike from time to time due to specific medical advances or what?
Well, I think Anne was mentioning before, I don't know if you repeat those statistics because I can't remember them off the top of my head, but it has been going on for a long time. I think there are spikes and there are rates at which it'll increase faster than others, but when you average it over a long period, as we actuaries like to do, then it's reasonably.
I think the 25-year average was devised because there was a spike. So, the technological increases in the last 25 years. So I don't know that it's necessarily particularly like that, but the 25-year average removes the spikes. So.
I guess I'm still thinking about predicting for the future.
Yes, exactly.
When's the next spike?
Exactly. Yeah. Or when's the next dip going to happen?
I don't know whether we'll cover this in the next session as well, but I know, having only come over from the UK less than a couple of years ago, certainly there's been some evidence starting to come through in that rate, which is consistent with what we've found, which is that rapid rate of improvement maybe is coming off the boil a little bit. But again, that might just be temporary. We don't know. If we get another medical advancement, then, I mean, I was hearing on the news last night that someone's been injecting mice with certain fluids, which means that the brain capacity will not degenerate, for example. So if we get an improvement in that way, then again, it'll shoot up.
Now, Richard, I will need to wind you up in time to give you your wine. So
in that case, don't let me stop you.
So thanks very much to Richard and to Anne for their excellent presentation, and thank you.